After we had been sitting 2 hours, the violent physical phenomena commenced. The table was twice lifted completely off the floor and swayed backwards and forwards in the air 3 or 4 inches above the carpet. Finally, Mrs. Moore was brought by a hand 3/4 of the distance round the table, and stood with her left hand in my right hand while the table was opened and shut twice. Discs were changed in the graphophone, and the instrument started and stopped by some unknown agency. Just as the psychic was coming out of trance, Sankey's refrain, "It is well with my soul," was being sung for the second or third time that evening. This brought in an unhappy, sobbing spirit, and the machine had to be stopped by Mrs. Moore, as she said these mournful spirits affected her charge injuriously. I have enjoyed opportunities of discussing with Professor Hislop the phenomena that occur while Miss Besnett is in trance. He had sat with her, and I am glad to say we agreed on 2 points: a) that he and Mrs. Murray Moore are beyond suspicion as to the honesty of the proceedings; b) that this young lady will be the means of solving some interesting problems and throwing new light on happenings which some investigators have hitherto considered a due to conscious fraud. Here, however, we part company. It is no doubt true that the muscles of the psychic's throat have been found to act in unison with the mysterious singing and whistling. It has also been shown, by a flashlight photograph that was once taken with Mrs. Moore's permission, that her disengaged hand has been detected holding a tambourine in the air, but the professor assumes from this, he has said it on the platform and to me, that, while in trance, she does the singing and whistling, and that she is the prime cause of every phenomenon, either with or without the aid of extraneous intelligences. To this I give a positive denial. The sympathetic action of the muscles of a medium when physical phenomena are in progress is a known fact. It was affirmed by Italian scientists not long ago in the case of Eusapia, but I assert that Miss Besnett, with her own physical organs, could not execute the singing or whistling without her neighbor knowing it, could not drag a heavy table 5 feet, could not levitate the table, or open and shut it, without mundane assistance, could not talk to her neighbor through a tube without his knowing she was doing it, could not cause lights to issue from her neighbor, nor could she wrest a tambourine out of his hands. It is no secret that, up to this time, Professor Hislop has not seen nor heard any reliable evidence that leads him to believe there is any such phenomenon as materialization. With such an equipment, how can he give an opinion on physical phenomena? I consider that what I heard when sitting with Miss Ada was due to extraneous intelligences. That such were present and active I have abundant evidence for myself. During this interesting sitting of January 29 I received a message from my guide which referred, with startling appropriateness, to a subject that has been in my mind for 2 days. It was conveyed in a remarkably delicate and tactful manner through the instrumentality of Mrs. Murray Moore, who is a sensitive, but I make bold to say that the lady does not know what is the significance attached to it. A fortnight later I was sitting with Mrs. Georgia at Rochester, N.Y., when the same spirit unexpectedly manifested through her automatic mirror script, and referred in a neat and unmistakable manner to this séance at Toledo in such a way as to exclude from consideration the overworked theory of mind reading. The two ladies at Toledo and Mrs. Georgia know nothing of one another. It is unfortunate that the best evidence for spiritualism is of so private a character that it cannot be published for fear of wounding the susceptibilities of living people. When I have said all that it is possible to say, I shall not have given my most cogent reasons for the belief that is in me. In Miss Ada Besnett we have a medium of the highest promise. I hope her friends will not allow her to sit with anyone who has not educated himself up to the point of conviction on the subject of telekinesis and materialization, for, if they do, I am afraid she will be misunderstood. Chapter 7. The Bangs Sisters at Chicago. Reason for visiting the Bangs Sisters. Account by a Canadian gentleman. First interview with May Bangs. She reads letter inside a closed envelope. Cleopatra appears to her clairvoyante vision. First precipitated picture. Picture is found on the further side of the canvas next to the sitter. The psychics receive messages from the spirits by taps on a hard surface. Precipitated writing found inside an envelope gummed and sealed with wax, seal not tampered with, May bangs does not touch the letter or slates after they are bound together. Instances of passage of matter through matter. Profile of Iola, close resemblance to photograph in my pocket. Use my own slates, rubber bands, and ink for letters. Citrate of lithium mixed with the ink. Replies written with the same ink. Letter from a spirit purporting to be Cleopatra. Picture of Cleopatra. Various other letters and pictures. Letters under stretched frames, with ink in sight. Diminution of ink in the pot. Essence extracted from the ink. Dematerialization of flowers. One bottle of ink used up in the precipitation of one letter. Flowers transferred into a closed envelope. Excitement and loss of self-control of May Bangs. Pictures for backwoodsmen from Oregon. Much discussion with reference to phenomena that occur in presence of Bangs sisters. Theory of fraud. Reasons why theory cannot be accepted. How the pictures are probably produced. Trials with Mr. William Marriott, the conjurer. Bangs not always successful. One of the principal reasons for my visiting the United States was to see a phenomenon described to me in the following letter, dated October 19, 1908, by a gentleman of considerable position and influence in Canada. Our next experience was at Chicago, with the Bangs sisters, of whom we had heard both good and evil reports. We were, in consequence, specially on the alert. I will leave you to judge of what we obtained there. We were told by friends who had visited them to write our questions before going to the house, and place them, with a number of blank sheets of stamped or initialed paper, inside an envelope gummed and sealed. This we did, using paper from a Toledo hotel that was decorated with a gilt monogram. We reached Chicago early on the following morning. At 9 o'clock we had found the Bangs residence, and secured an immediate séance, before the arrival of their numerous clients. We sat with Miss May Bangs. To this day she is ignorant of our names or where we came from, nor had she any inkling of our visit or its purpose. We accompanied her, each in turn, into a comfortable little boudoir on the sunny side of the house, looking out on a bit of lawn. The only window remained open. In the center of the room was a table, 4 feet square, covered with a woolen cloth. The medium sat opposite to me, about a foot or more from the table. The only object on the table was an open inkstand. I said I had brought with me some questions in a sealed envelope, and hoped to obtain replies through her mediumship. She said, "We will try." She then fetched a pair of hinged slated, the frames of which were covered with dark cloth, gave them to me, and resumed her seat saying, "Place your letter between the slates, close them, and secure them with these stout rubber bands. Lay the slates on the table, in front of you, and place both hands flat on top of them." The medium's instructions having been carried out, we engaged in general conversation. 3 times she interrupted the talk to ask, "Is the name or place correctly spelt?" Foreign names mentioned in my questions, showing that some knowledge of what I had written was reaching her. If I assented, or made a slight correction, she would write on a pad resting on her knee, then resumed our conversation where it had dropped. About half an hour was thus spent, when 3 distinct raps were heard and felt by me, proceeding, apparently, from the center of the table. Miss Bangs then said, "The séance is over, you have obtained what you are to get, you may open your envelope now or later." I opened the hinged slates, found the envelope as I had placed it, untouched and still sealed, thanked the lady, and left the room. When my brother passed in for his turn, while waiting for my brother, in the adjoining room, I slit open the end of my envelope with my penknife, and found, besides my questions, 9½ pages of the blank paper covered with writing in ink, as if with a steel pen, duly numbered, and written at the instance of the spirit friend to whom I had addressed 4 out of 5 questions, and signed in full. The replies were categorical, giving or confirming information of great value to me personally, referring to facts and happenings of 40 years ago, which the spirit and I alone were aware of, and adding the names of individuals whom I had not named in my questions, but whom we both knew in the past, and who had participated in the events referred to by me. The reply to the 5th and last question was in the form of greetings from spirit friends who were known to me when they were in earth life, and now come to me as so-called guides. When one writes rapidly, a blotter is necessary at the turnover to a new page. This, apparently, was not required by the spirit writer, for the ink is the same depth of black at the foot as at the top of the pages. The handwriting of the last message, and each signature at the bottom of it, differs from that which contained replies to my first four questions. It is not claimed that this writing is done by spirit friends themselves, but, at their dictation, by the medium's control, who has become expert in this form of manifestation. Can telepathy account for these replies? Can it explain the transfer of the ink from the bottle on the table to the folded blank pages within the sealed envelope between the slates under my hands? It would take a very fast writer at least an hour and a quarter to write what the spirit performed in half an hour, and this is leaving out consideration the deliberation required for penning the involved replies to my questions. I regret that they are of such a personal nature that I cannot even send you extracts. My brother's replies covered about 13 pages. Among them were three signed notes from three different spirit friends who had come to him in my house here, or at Detroit, and at the Johnsons, in Toledo. On the way up from New York I had heard a great deal of evil about the Bangs sisters, and I had also seen five of the pictures done, as their owners told me, in their presence, within 3 feet of them, by invisible agency, and through the mediumship of these women, whose only participation in the production was that they held the canvases. I wished to make a through test of both letters and pictures. Many people in London were much interested in the Canadian gentleman's account. It had been the theme of discussion, and I was determined not to return to England without making the best attempt I could to solve the mystery. I arrived at Chicago on the afternoon of Sunday, January 17, 1909. And called upon the Bangs sisters by appointment at 6 p.m., ostensibly for the purpose of arranging sittings for the week. I persuaded May Bangs, however, to sit with me that evening for a letter. In anticipation of her consent, I had brought one in my pocket. She showed me into a small room some 12 feet by 8 feet, and produced two slates, between which I placed my letter. We sat at a small oak table, which measured 3 feet 8 inches by 2 feet 4 inches, covered with a green cloth that did not extend anywhere beyond the top. May Bangs pinched one end of the two slates together while I secured them with four rubber bands, two one way and two the other. My letter was written to my guide, Iola, and inside the envelope I had enclosed four blank sheets of Succor Hotel, Toledo, paper for the expected reply. This paper was all marked with a private mark. The envelope was closed with a 2-cent postage stamp. Upon the slates, now in my hands, she put a small pot of ink, and over that a piece of Bristol board very slightly larger than the slates. She then said, as if impressed with some doubt, "Have you addressed this spirit, to whom you are writing, by a definite name?" "No," I replied. "Then please write the name on a piece of paper and put it on top of the slates." This I did without her being able to see what I was writing. The paper was doubled and placed my side of the pot of ink under the Bristol board. She now began to see clairvoyantly, and described the form of a young lady whom I recognized as Iola, bringing two old people whom I gathered from her talk to be my father and mother. She also saw two young men, probably my brothers in spirit life. She now began, sentence by sentence, to give me the exact questions in my letter. Presently she said, "Is this the name?" and handed me, from the pad she held, a piece of paper upon which was written quite plainly the Christian and surname of Iola when in earth life, the same name I had written on the piece of paper now on the slates close under my hand. She also said, "Your paper with the name has gone in between the slates." All this time May Bangs was sitting 1 foot away from the table on the opposite side to me, with a writing pad and pencil in her hands, which were 2 feet from the slates. The gas was burning brightly. 3/4 of an hour had passed from the time of our sitting down, when 3 taps on the slates announced that the reply was finished. I took off the Bristol board and found my piece of paper gone. When I opened the slates I found the paper inside by the letter. The letter was slit open from the top, and 4 pages of reply were found inside. I examined it, and found that it was the same paper I had put in at the Toledo Hotel with my private mark on it. The letter of reply contained private messages which I am unable to make public. I was signed correctly, and answered nearly all my questions. During the sitting, May Bangs saw the form of some Eastern queen surrounded by attendants. It was obviously Cleopatra, who came to redeem her promise given the day before at Toledo. January 18, 11 to 12.30. Atmospheric conditions good. A slight thaw underfoot, but the air dry. 67, I asked for a picture to be precipitated of my guide as she is now in spirit life. Inside my waistcoat I had a pocket, used for dollar bills, into which I put two full-faced photographs, carte de visite, of Iola. One was taken in 1857, the other in A867. Two thin canvases stretched on wooden frames and covered with thin paper were placed face to face and held up in the window. The blind was drawn to the top of the canvases, and curtains were hung up in my presence on either side. The window has a southern aspect, and the light coming through the two semi-soft hyphen transparent canvases is sufficient for the purposes of taking notes and seeing everything that goes on. The small oak table was lengthways in the window, the bottom of the canvases rests upon it. May Bangs sat on my right side, facing me, and pinching together with her right hand one side of the canvases, Lizzie Bangs on my left side facing me, and pinching together the other side of the canvases with her left hand. I faced the middle of the canvases, my nose between 2 feet and 2 feet 6 inches from them. We had to wait some time. After a few minutes the canvas assumed various hues, rosy, blue, and brown. It would become dark and light independently of the sun being cloudy or not. Dim outlines of faces occasionally appeared in different parts of the canvas. When we had been sitting about 25 minutes, May Bangs got up from her seat and said, "Hold on to this, please, I want to get something for my sister's cold." I then took her place, pinching the canvases together with my right hand. In 5 minutes or so she returned with a small bottle for her sister to sniff, and we resumed our original seats. We had been sitting 40 minutes when the right and left edges of the canvas began to darken, and the face and bust suddenly appeared. It was finished in 35 minutes, that is, 1 hour and 15 minutes from the time we first sat down. On separating the two canvases, it was found that the picture was on the further side of the one nearest to me, and the material was quite damp. The other canvas, which had been pressing against it all the time, was unsoiled. The stuff comes off on the finger, a smutty oily substance. This must be remembered, as it negatives the supposition that chalks or pastels only are used. The actual picture, therefore, took 35 minutes to precipitate. It is richer in tone now than it was when put on a sofa after the sitting, but in other respects just the same. The likeness to the carte de visite in my dollar pocket is not remarkable. But there are points about it which show that the invisible workers had access to these photographs. We now wanted to find out which one of the other photographs in my possession it was the wish of my guide I should bring on the 20th, the day appointed for my next picture. Without the psychics seeing them, I laid out 5 under the cover of a card, face downwards. May Bangs said, "Not the little one, there was one taken at a very early age. The one nearest to me is a profile picture." "Correct," she rather objects to the old-fashioned style of the hair, but selects that as she sees you like it best. "Correct." During the sitting we communicated occasionally with the spirits by raps. I understood that the invisibles used Morse code. 68, January 19, 1909. 10 to 12, noon. Atmospheric conditions good. I took the Bangs sisters a letter containing 2 sheets, 4 pages, of questions. In the envelope I put 4 blank sheets of hotel paper marked with a private mark. The envelope which contained these 6 sheets was gummed and sealed with my signet ring. I had written 23 questions to my guide. Was received by May Bangs in the same small room, and, as before, the room was flooded with light. I put the letter between her 2 slates, which are covered with woolen at the edges so as to exclude the faintest ray of light. She took hold of the double slate ends with one hand while I put 4 rubber bands round the slates, as I had done 2 days previously. The slates were then put on the table, The same little vessel of ink was placed on top, and over all the Bristol board before mentioned. From this moment May Banks had nothing to do with the slated, they were in my own possession under my hands. The psychic and I sat opposite to one another, she was leaning back in her chair, writing on a pad of paper. After we had been sitting, talking, for a quarter of an hour, May Banks began telling me what my questions were, and answering some of them. Presently she said, "Tear off the corner of one of your visiting cards, so that you can identify it again, put it on the slates, and we will see what happens to it." About 15 minutes later she said, "Why do you write to your relative in such a formal style? Write a postscript on a piece of paper, naming your wife in the same familiar way as you would if writing to this spirit in life." This I did without her seeing what I had written, and put the piece of paper, doubled up, also on the slates. She then went on as before, repeating my questions within the sealed envelope. At 11:10 the psychic said, "Your card has gone into the letter." When an hour and three quarters had elapsed from the time we began the sitting, three knocks on the table announced that the writing was finished. I now opened the slates. Inside I found my packet intact, with seal untouched. On the outside of the envelope was written, "The little slip, my postscript, has been arranged to your hat in the other room." This was signed by an initial, the Christian name of my guide. I slit open the envelope at the top and found inside it, A. my questions, contained in 4 pages, B. 8 pages of reply from the spirit, in ink, as if written with a steel pen, C. my visiting card. I then went into the drawing room, where I had left my hat, found that it had been moved, and that inside the lining was my postscript. Before I left, May Banks read out to me the questions in my letter, which she had written on her pad as she saw them in the astral light. They were all correct in sense, though not in actual phrasing, and the curious thing was that she read them out in precisely the proper consecutive order, 1, 2, up to 23. With some reluctance, she later eventually surrendered the pages of the pad to me. It is one of the most curious documents in my possession. The following is the letter of reply to my questions. "My dear Dash, I am with you once again and, as ever, delighted to manifest my presence in ever so slight a manner. Now you are trying me again, trying my memory of earthly things, places, and persons, and how I do wish I could dare asunder the little barrier preventing me from giving free and full expression. But do you know in all these matters my memory is perfectly clear when I stand free and unhampered in the spiritual atmosphere, but somehow when I return into Earth's atmosphere, so many things become hazy and incomplete. In other words, it is not designed that mortals shall know it all. If it were so, research would be of the past, and spiritual matters of Earth be at a standstill. These little indeficiencies, sick, lead the mind to further inquiry, and little by little the returns bringing reassurance is given. I am not familiar with all the laws governing spirit return in outward demonstration. I am constantly learning, and in time know I shall bring the beautiful trust into your own home. I am 103 trying and shall continue to try for the desirable conditions, for I feel coming to you, and alone I would find that condition of thought that heretofore has been missing, and thereby give free and full evidence of identity you so much desire. The law of evolution is carrying us onward and upward in spiritual truth just as fast as mortal mind is capable of accepting and understanding in its true light, and if at times we fail to give you all that your mind requires, do not doubt, but know, that time will reward you. It surely will. And right here I want to say to you that our beautiful Cleopatra, who was such a wonderful intelligence here on Earth, and in her many years of life and study in the higher advanced spheres in spirit life, is more capable in guiding you in these scientific problems than those who have been in spirit life in times of the past century, and to help you to solve and furnish the missing link for the world of science. This has never been given, because science in the material world has not yet reached an understanding of the elements and laws even of their own atmosphere. They acknowledge the existence of electricity, its results and effect under certain conditions reached through long study and experimenting, but they cannot produce it independent in substance. It is the propelling power of all life, all action, and the time will come when your people of science will understand it better, and so there are other elements in the very atmosphere about you that spirits must understand and utilize to bring about these results. It is because of your ignorance of these elements and lack of knowledge of the average spirits, myself included, coming in contact with these laws that form the barrier of expression. As before stated, in my own domain, all that you seek to know of me this morning is as clear as the noonday sun, but my great anxiety to have powers to give it, as also your anxiety to receive, for the time bars me in expression. There are many subjects of your letter I would like to take in full explanation fully, but I fear I cannot in this one meeting, so I shall only refer to them briefly, for all come under the same law, that I am with you in every move you make. Travelling from your own location to that of your home in England, you need not doubt. I do not take record of the intervening space of action but rush on straight, glide through space, as it were, in the twinkling of an eye. I do not know all that transpires in your daily life as to material things, but make recognition of them on the whole, and particularly of your success and happiness, for this is ever uppermost in mind. I will go to and prepare her mind, so that she will overcome that timidity of spiritual matters, for I am desirous coming to her as I have to you, and believe, yes no, with her willingness and your combined efforts some wonderful demonstration may be received in the home proving this great truth. I have been impressing the psychic how to answer some of your inquiries, for I cannot refer to all in writing. I now feel the forces waning, and must soon close. The little impressions forming on one of the photographs is my effort, and I hope to conclude my efforts with some manifestation conclusive and interesting to you. Adieu. Signed by the Earth name of Iola. The handwriting is the same as that in the previous letter, and has no resemblance to that of Iola when she was in Earth life. All the handwriting of replies to letters through the mediumship of the Bangs sisters has the same characteristics, as if written or precipitated by one amanuensis. It seems probable that the spirit dictates to a writing guide, whose idiosyncrasies creep in. There are Americanisms in the above letter which certainly did not emanate from my guide. I consider that the general tone of the letter is much in advance of the mind of the psychic in the room. The pages were numbered by the writer, and the sequence of the writing was as follows. Page 5 was found at the back of page 4. Page 6 at the back of page 3, page 7 at the back of page 2. 69, on the following morning, January 20, 1909, atmospheric conditions good. Went to the Bangs sisters for a profile portrait of Iola, as arranged on 18th. Everything was ready at 10.50, and we sat till 11.30. I had in my dollar pocket a carte de visite of Iola, taken in the year 1874. The mediums had never seen this or any other photograph in my possession. 15 minutes after we sat in the window the face and bust appeared. The profile was looking to the right, precisely the same aspect as it has now, framed, hanging in my room. Remember, I was looking through the back of the picture, and it was forming on the further side of that one of the two canvases nearer to me. Consequently, had it gone on as it was and been finished, it would now, when framed, be profile left. When the portrait was nearly finished the two canvases were lowered towards me onto the table, the mediums being impressed, apparently, to do this. A telegraphic message came by taps to May Bangs, who said, she wants this picture for your wife specially, as well as for you. She thinks that your wife would prefer to see her in the pose to which she is accustomed. Up went the canvases again to the window, and I found that the whole picture was changed round, so that the profile looked to the left instead of to the right. In a few minutes the portrait was completed, May Bangs remarking, she says she cannot put in the hand. From the time the face and bust first appeared to the time the canvases were separated and the finished picture put on the sofa in the next room, 25 minutes elapsed. Neither of the psychics had ever seen the carte de visite in my pocket. How did they know normally that there ought to be any hand in the picture? As a matter of fact, in this photo there is a hand, the left, supporting the cheek on its left side. This was omitted in the color picture. When the portrait was finished, it bore a very close resemblance to the photograph. It was looking in the same direction, to the right. As to likeness, it is impossible for anyone who compares the photograph with the picture to deny that they are one and the same individual. At the same time, the picture is by no means a slavish copy of the photograph.